You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. Every week, I am really, really excited to leave my day job of running Thompson & Terry Recruitment to introduce you to trusted experts, interesting businesses, community projects, just interesting stuff in the world of business all across Oxfordshire. And today, I think it's going to be a special one. So today we are talking about Hook Norton Community Land Trust. And to do that, we are joined by Grant Appleton, Charlie Luxton and Paul Pitsala to do that. So I look forward to introducing our three guests, as I'm sure you're interested to hear all about them. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. As you heard before that song, today we are joined by three experts who are going to be sharing some really inside info and really the story behind Hook Norton Community Land Trust. So let's start. Grant, for those who have never heard of Hook Norton Community Land Trust, what is it all about? Tell the listener.
Right, well, it's a lovely project. I've only been involved in the latter stages. Charlie will know a lot more about how it started and how it was envisaged and how it's become reality. It's a wonderful project because it's an affordable, sustainable housing scheme. There are 12 homes that we're building in Hook Norton that are developed to passive house standards, you know, in terms of energy efficiency. They've got a microgrid. They've got solar power. And crucial to this is that it's built in a way that allows us to make it available for the community, and it's available for the affordable people who need housing within the village. So it's going to service people who can't afford to live in the village, people who work in the shops, people who run the organizations. We've got a lady who runs the art group. You know, these are people who are unable to find homes because the price of housing has gone so high. So it's really built for those people, but it's built with the intention of making it very, very affordable to run as well. So in terms of the energy efficiencies, and Charlie can talk much more about that one. But it's a lovely project because it's a community project. It's one I've got involved in the later stages in terms of engaging with the community and from a social media perspective, and trying to get feedback and very much get the community involved in not just the build, but also in the funding. So that's my role within the organization. But we hope, and we believe that this could become a template for other villages and other communities to do the same thing, because it's built from the inside. It's built from the community upwards rather than the community, you know, being told that we're not being gifted these homes by a big land developer or by a big building company. We are actually building them for ourselves as a community.
Amazing, amazing. Charlie, it's probably a good time to bring you in here. Do tell those listening at home all about you and indeed your own business and your involvement.
Yeah, so I run an architecture practice called Charlie Luxton Design. We specialize in sustainable architecture, sustainable buildings from offices to one-off houses and you know, in this 12-unit scheme that Grant's mentioned. So we're very focused on embodied carbon and carbon in use. So, you know, how much carbon and energy it takes to actually build something, and then how much energy and carbon, or critically, to refurbish an existing structure and repurpose an existing structure, and then how much energy it takes to run it. So life cycle carbon analysis, as well as hopefully creating beautiful places for people to live. And, you know, we're based up in Hook Norton, you know, working around Oxfordshire. So that's me. But the project, you know, I think as Grant mentioned, really grew from the community. So we've had 160 new houses in the village. And from our low carbon group, which has been running in the village for about 12 years, something like that, we asked people what they wanted us to focus on, because we'd done some stuff around a car club, an electric car club. We'd done some stuff with PVs. We've lent money to people to do refurbishment, sustainable improvements to their homes, put PVs on the school, and PVs on local businesses, done all kinds of stuff. And we said to them, what do you want us to think about next? And we were genuinely surprised when over 78% or something of the people who returned the questionnaire, and it was a high turnout, about 500-600 returned questionnaires. It was really, really amazing penetration to the, you know, village kind of mindset, if you like, said, look at housing. Because the houses that have been built here have not gone, you know, the affordable housing built here has not gone to local people. It hasn't really started solving the affordability issue that we have in communities, which, you know, Grant alluded to, that we have, yes, you know, it's great when our house prices go up. We all feel very nice when we look at our pensions and we look at the back of the, you know, the newspaper and see what houses are going for. But the inverse of that is that it's really, really difficult for young people and people who have not, you know, got big incomes to live in this area. And Oxfordshire is really struggling under this weight.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And really look forward to building on that more over the next hour. But last but certainly not least, Paul, let's introduce you to those listening at home. So tell them all about you and indeed your involvement and your business.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, Ben. So my name's Paul Pizzola, and I originally had a career in private client in investment management, working in the home counties and in the city. So I'm sort of very familiar with the ins and outs of investments and working with clients. And then I guess around the time of the global financial crisis, it kind of caused me to reflect and, you know, ask, what is the purpose of finance? And that took me on a journey, as they say, and I ended up at a place in Devon called Schumacher College, Schumacher of E.F. Schumacher fame, and coined the term, or used the term, small is beautiful. So I was really looking at how to divine economics as if people and planet and place mattered. And sort of through that, I went back to the city and then sort of eventually kind of came back to Devon and got involved with an organization called FX, E-T-H-E-X, FX.org.uk. And FX, it's, you know, purpose in life is to create fairer societies, climate positive investing, and resilient communities, which of course is what Hook Norton has in absolute abundance, all of those three things. And we're a platform, we're a crowdfunding impact platform. Our mission is to democratize finance and, you know, allow everyday people to invest in projects such as Hook Norton. We've been around for 10 years. We had our 10-year impact event actually last week up in Oxford. We've raised 120 million across 200 projects, and yeah, like I say, affordable homes and what Charlie and Grant are doing really hits the sweet spot.
Amazing. Paul, I am going to stay with you with one of the three hardest questions of this morning, because you're all experts within your field, but one of the hardest questions is choosing a song on the radio. There's always so much pressure, isn't there? But you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
It's Talking Head, Once in a Lifetime. I mean, I just love that song. It speaks volumes, and it's so sort of current today. Yeah, it just brings a smile to my face. I love it.
Amazing.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. And today I'm joined by three experts, and we're talking about a really, really interesting topic that I think that anyone listening would find fascinating, because we will, certainly most of us, live in a property. And certainly it's been widely reported, the housing crisis in Oxfordshire. So we are looking to shine a light on Hook Norton Community Land Trust. So Grant, I just want to bring you in, and I'm sure Paul and Charlie may want to comment on this, but with quite a big question, what is the housing crisis in Oxfordshire? How bad is it?
Oh, I'm going to have to defer to Charlie on that one. He knows stats and figures much more than I do. I mean, there is clearly a housing crisis, you know, certainly in some of the rural communities where we don't expect there to be a housing crisis. You know, a lot of the focus is on, you know, urban areas and urban deprivation and that, but it does factor through all the way through and permeate through society. So we've got places like, you know, Chipping Norton, which is perceived as being a very, very wealthy area. But there are pockets of deprivation there. You know, there are issues with community, mental health issues. There's issues with homelessness even. You know, these are things that you don't expect to find in the rural communities and in these small little villages. And yet you do. And it's because of, you know, people holding onto housing that they no longer need, or perhaps staying in houses, you know, 4-bedroom, 5-bedroom houses that they, you know, and all the families moved out, they haven't downsized. You know, they're literally, the housing stock is tied up within those in those boundaries. So it is an issue. And you know, every time that we've gone out and spoken to people within the community, and not just our community, but the surrounding communities, it's always at the forefront. It's always that saying to us, look, I can't afford for my children to live here. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to stay? You know, I want to retire one day. I want to downsize, but where are my children going to stay? Can they not live in the village where they grew up? And it's those community ties that are being eroded. You know, people are moving out into the bigger cities, into the bigger towns, and those communities are disintegrating. You know, we're having people who are coming in that are not necessarily, that are buying second homes, perhaps. They are buying, you know, creating Airbnbs. You know, they're not sending their children to the local schools. You know, there are issues around that as well. You know, we're a very pretty area. You know, it's a lovely part of the world. But yet the perception is that, you know, we are privileged, you know, but we are not. You know, the one generation that were lucky enough to buy homes in the 70s and 80s. And as Charlie said, you know, just look at the house prices rising all the time and thinking, okay, we're all right. But it's you know, it's the next generation. I've got three older boys in their 20s, and I'm thinking, how are they going to afford a home? You know, where are they going to find it? I mean, where is it going to come from? And I don't think it's obvious. And I think that's in a nutshell what I think the housing crisis is. And innovative minds, you know, bigger than mine, are coming up with solutions. And you know, Charlie's certainly got a view on that as well.
Absolutely. Charlie, just by all means, sort of build on that point from Grant. But I'm also quite interested, because I think a big word that came out from Grant's great points there was around community, wasn't it? And I think what you guys have done in Hook Norton is build a real community that are engaged and inspired and working together. So yeah, build on Grant's point, but also around that, why do you believe that the community has really come together in Hook Norton?
Hook Norton's an interesting place in that there isn't a main road through it. So it's actually quite a large village. It was about 750 houses when I came here 18 years ago. It's now 900 plus houses. So it's grown significantly, but critically, it doesn't have a big road through the middle of it. So it's never sort of been sort of washed out, if you like, by this kind of traffic driving through the middle of it, and actually has retained a village shop, has got a dentist, has got a butcher's, which actually opened relatively recently, has got the brewery, fire station, doctor's surgery. So, you know, it still has just, the numbers just mean that we've just held on to enough stuff to keep community really thriving here, I think. The numbers on the housing crisis are really interesting, but you know, we've had all these houses, and therefore nominally about, I think it's about 15% of houses will be, you know, of a certain size will be affordable. So that's been nominally 30 to 40 houses, affordable houses built in the village. And by affordable, that means at 20% below market rate. So 20% below market rate, or less than or equivalent to the what used to be the housing benefit allowance, which has now got a slightly different name. I haven't kept up with the name, but basically you can rent this house with the housing benefit support that you get, housing support. So that defines affordable, which is important. We've in this community, we identified a need to look at housing. We identified a small piece of land, and we're very lucky, as I think you've indicated, to have a sort of a breadth of skills and interest of people to try and deliver a sustainable housing scheme that challenges the way in which we do these things. So we looked at 12 units, and just from the local community, we have a list of, I think it's over 50, 55 people expressing an interest in, and people that would also comply with the requirements of being on the housing list for the local council. So, you know, that shows the actual demand that is still here, despite the fact that we've had 40 odd houses. Now, That's because those 40 houses have not gone to people with local connection. They've just been given to people on the housing list. And that's kind of like the way in which it traditionally works. And, you know, they have a big list and they want to get people off that housing list. And that is their principal aim. And obviously they prioritize people with the most significant needs, which is understandable. So it's not like anyone has set out to create a dysfunctional, you know, system. But ultimately, you know, the communities are really valuable. And I don't think enough value has been put on those places and that intangible asset. And critically, if everyone's children move out of the community, you lose that intergenerational sort of memory, that intergenerational identity, which Hook Norton as a place still has and lots of little communities still have. Part of the problem is that Oxfordshire is very desirable. There are plans to build 100,000 new homes in Oxfordshire by 2050. I mean, it is a vast scale of development, partly because of the fragmentation of home sizes and partly to do with people moving to where the work is, you know, and that is in the south of England. So, you know, that tips into this housing crisis, that if you start flushing 100,000 new households into the county of Oxfordshire, you put a lot of stress on infrastructure, but also, and I think we don't value this enough, you put a lot of stress on existing communities. You change them quite significantly. And I think this idea that the communities are not being valued by the planning system, or certainly the developer-led planning system as we know it, and I'm not sure they're particularly being valued by local councils, given the enormous strains that they're under. And again, there's no great evil bogeyman here, you know, or whatever. It's just the stress and pressures there. And so I think we as a community have tried to make a stand for what community means and how communities can start to help themselves. I think, you know, on a high level, that's part of it. And the second thing, I'm sorry, I'm really rambling here, but I had spent the last 6 years. I spent the last 6 years on this project and I'm fascinated by self-build and more importantly, I'm fascinated by engaging people in the delivery of their own places to live, right? Because we see when people are involved in self-build, like let's say someone self-builds their house, they will move every 20 years, okay? If someone buys a house, it was 7 or 8 years. It might have shifted around, but it's similar sort of magnitude of difference. Because when people have committed and invested and put some of their self into something, whatever that might be, they stay. And I think trying to harness that connection to place and that ability to engage with community and make community stronger by being involved in how it solves its own problems, I think is really, really very much at the heart of what this is about.
No, really, really good points there. Really, really good points. And Paul, I'm going to ask a very sort of blasé question because I'm sure you can't answer it, certainly within an hour. But how is this funded? How is affordable housing funded? And I appreciate it's probably quite complex. But yeah, give that overview.
Sure. Thanks, Ben. Well, it does depend on what each scheme. And so I'm sure Grant and Charlie can give you a little bit of detail on that. But generally speaking, there's a host of people that are involved in the funding. And funding comes in different shapes and forms. There's, you know, funding from grants, money, foundations, organizations like Cooperatives UK. They often get involved in this space. It's called, you know, broadly it's called a community share. So there's a, if you like, a financial ecosystem that's in place to help organizations like Hook Norton get investor ready. And I think what makes these sorts of organizations really interesting is that you get a host of really professional people from all sorts of different types of professions: accountants, engineers, architects, people who've worked in the city, and they sort of bring all these skills to bear in putting a project like Hook Norton together. And these projects often have very, very long lead times. But it's when you have you know really good people, good team, good organizations, it makes a project a lot easier to finance. So you get grant money, the matched funding. Of course, there's often bank debt involved. There might be a financing partner. I believe there is a financing partner in the piece. So, Brooke Morton. Then there might be somebody who's going to buy the project at sort of towards the end of the life and do some sort of deal there. And then, of course, you know, organizations like Ethics get involved or the community share level. So there's quite a lot of moving parts to put the financing package together whilst people like Charlie, Grant, and their team are developing the project, sort of, you know, liaising with the community. And I think that's what makes this project really, really, really super exciting and really, you know, a model for the future. It's the amount of community engagement that has been put into this, right in the beginning, to understand, you know, what makes it work for everybody. And that's why I think it's a fantastic project and why, you know, Ethics is really proud to be one of the financing partners.
So I think that so the usual way is that Homes England provides some money, and I can't quite remember the statistic, but I know Homes England have recently had to give a load of their money back to the government because they haven't spent it. So there is an issue there. Secondly, at the moment, it's basically a when you get permission for over, and it varies for every local authority, but let's say you get permission for over 8 houses, 10 houses, 5 houses, it really depends on the local authority. It's that sort of level. I think you get up this 15 to 20% requirement for affordable. Okay, again, it slightly depends on the local authority. So let's say I am one of the big house builders. Okay, I could name them, but we'll try and keep them out. I mean, there are 8 of them now, and critically, they deliver 60% of all the new housing in this country.
Wow.
And we know, or certainly a few years ago, there was some research done, and 74% of people would never buy a new house. So you can tell how well they are managing their role in that process. But critically, let's say I get a permission for 100 houses, 20 of those will be affordable. So the developer gets some money from Home England, they fund it themselves, and then they will then sell the lease onto a registered social provider. So Soha, Asto, there's loads of really good companies that run affordable housing for people. And they've been around 4 years, and there's some very good ones out there. So the way that we funded it is we were sold the land very cheaply by Chirwell Council. They've been involved. We bought some land very cheaply from one of the neighbours, considering the fact that it's become development land. It was very, very affordable. So it was very kind of him to do that. We then got some initial grant funding from various begging bowls and organisations, and Home England being one of them a little bit. And then we have somebody who has funded the construction because they are a very interesting company called Greencore, and they are committed to delivering carbon neutral housing in Oxfordshire. And so they've been our partners, and again, very, very, very helpful. And then we have sold 8 of those units, which will be affordable housing. That has been sold long lease to, so the leasehold has been sold to Soha, which is a registered social authority. We are selling 4 units at market value to cross-subsidise the scheme to help pay for the landscape quality. And critically, we've also built a community building on that. So there's the 8 affordable, 4 sale, all the same size, same size and stuff. And then a small community building, which has 2 bedrooms in it that you can rent overnight. One of the rooms is going to be used as well for a treatment place because there's so many more people moved to Hook Norton. The doctor's surgery's maxed out. There used to be a treatment room that people could do, you know, whatever kind of therapies and physiotherapy and stuff. In the doctor's surgery, that's no longer available. So we're providing that. And we're providing a work hub, so that you can rent a desk in a very highly insulated, warm space, so you don't have to travel to work as much, again, reducing carbon. And we're also, so there will be ongoing, you will have the sale receipts, the leasehold receipts, and then the ongoing rental for the 2 overnight rooms and the work space, which will then provide us an income, which means we can provide people who invest in the scheme through Ethics with a return on their investment. So that's how we're funded. And that is slightly, the normal model is quite simply get a load of money from Home England to help get the thing going. The big developer sort of builds it and then sells it on to a registered social provider who carries it on and runs it.
Amazing, amazing, really, really fascinating. So to lower the tone, or maybe higher the tone, depending on your song choice, I'm going to stay with you, Charlie. And as with Paul, and as with Grant later in the show, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners. So what is your song choice, and why have you picked it?
So I've chosen What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, because it's really the album. I don't think you're going to play the whole album, because there won't be much time for us to talk, but really you should just play the whole album, because it's one of the greatest albums of the 20th century. And critically, it's a protest album, and it's about the Vietnam War. It's about environmental destruction. It's about all kinds of social unrest in the 1970s. And it is just the most incredible piece of music. So What's Going On by Marvin Gaye.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch podcast, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Can't believe this show's, we're getting through it so quickly. So such fascinating points. And certainly I'm sure there's going to be lots of searching after this show for those listening in. Grant, I just want to bring you back into the conversation, really. And I think something you said earlier in the show was around that piece around people's children being able to buy property and that kind of social piece locally. You know, we've spoken about the use of carbon and carbon footprint. So I'm just quite keen to kind of understand in terms of the project how you've considered so many factors, and I guess kind of where has there been some flex, and where can't there be some flex with this project? And again, I appreciate it. Sorry, quite a big question.
Right. Okay. Well. Okay. So I mean, if we look at the people in the village that need help. You know, starting from the people in the village that need housing. You know, there's a young lady who works at the butcher shop. She lives just literally next door to the butcher shop, but she pays, her rent has gone up twice in the last, private landlord, her rent has gone up twice in the last 18 months, wow. £65 each time. She spent a lot of money on heating. So, you know, that the whole energy efficiency of these buildings was paramount to being able to make sure that the buildings are so efficient that they can deliver the savings that she needs to make. So, you know, there's security with these buildings. It's not going to be a private landlord who might decide in 3 months' time to sell to someone from London who wants it to build an Airbnb in a lovely little village. So it's kind of securing those people, but it's also making sure that the development is fit for purpose, so that they, you know, we look at, you know, the passive house standards that we're building to, you know, we'll save 75%, 80%, 90%. And also because of the energy that we're actually generating through the solar panels, we can sell it back to the tenants at a reduced price. So they will be paying less than the energy price cap for a very small amount of energy that they're using. So very little limited electricity that they will be using, because they don't need to use more than that. So I mean, I'm thinking of people like Hannah in the butcher shop who, we had a piece on BBC, BBC South, and sorry to bring in competitors or whatever for you.
No, they're great.
A little while ago, and I said to her, are you going to watch it? Because it's going to be on at 6 o'clock in the evening, and it's going to be a nice piece on the BBC News. And she said, well, I can't, because I can't afford a license fee. You know, she can't afford it because everything is going into that house. Everything is going to heating that house. Everything is going towards paying the rent in that house. And her rental is going up much more than her wages are. So from that perspective, you know, we're building a solution to a problem. You know, we spoke about the funding just now, and the funding is paramount, because it not just is the funding important that we can finish the project in the way that we want to, and Charlie spoke about the landscaping and everything else as well, but the small elements of funding that we're sort of seeking from community shares is going to empower the local community. And Paul's, you know, there are two pieces of people, two audiences here that will be potentially interested in investing. And one is the locals, and that's empowering the local people so that they feel they're preserving ties and investing in the community. So they're involved in the decision-making. They're supporting innovation. And then you've got the ethical and financial returns that will be generated for the people outside of the community. So everybody can have a stake in this building, and we really hope that people invest in it. So at the moment, we're in that share offer phase. As Charlie said, we will raise funds from sales of elements of it. We will be a growing concern, what is the expression, because of the community hub. you know, in terms of people renting those rooms and renting the room for the therapy sessions, etc. So, you know, we do not see this ending as soon as we hand over the homes. You know, this is going to be an ongoing project. And what we're seeing now is a lot of other community land trusts coming to us. We've got Chipping Norton, who are trying to set something up at the moment. And they're looking at projects and what they could potentially get involved with and what's important for their community. And they come to us and asking us our advice. So, you know, there's a lot of communication that's going on between these organizations now. And that's also really, really good for us because, you know, being able to give it back to somebody else, you know, to say, look, these are some of the problems we encountered. These are some of the challenges we faced. Mm. Oh, he's right. I mean, the whole business model is a massively complicated, you know, and I think Paul mentioned this too. You know, it is always moving pieces to try to get them all to work in, work together and deliver the project. So I don't know if that answered your question, but it answered something.
Yeah, no, very, very much so. What's your take, Charlie?
Well, just to add that we set out with very high ambitions because we wanted to not only make it a community-led project that focused on delivering affordable housing as much as we could to local people, but also affordable living. And I think that's the point Grant was making. It's not just the rent. If like your bills are enormous, then you know that's not an affordable life, even if the rent's low. So it was critical that we obviously wanted, where we started out as a low carbon group. So it's critical that the buildings were low carbon in construction occupation. But also, we're trying to tackle this energy piece. We're trying to tackle this transport piece. We're trying to tackle this work piece. Because to look at the houses in isolation as lead developers, you know, main developers do, is to kind of miss the point, really, that these houses are actually part of a huge system, right? Like of energy supply, traveling to and from work, going to the shop. You know, you need to start thinking on a systemic way. And I think we were trying to do that in a small scale. And partly what we were trying to do was to set up an exemplar that tackled all of these issues so that other people could go, look, it is possible. You can do this. Now, the way we can do it is because we don't have a big developer, you know, looking to earn 20% profit on everything they do. And we managed to get the land price low. But as a result, we've managed to build to a higher standard and we've managed to build with more landscaping costs and to build this community building. So, it doesn't answer everything because those things can't happen everywhere. But I think what it does show is that there is an alternative approach. And at the moment, as I've already said, you know, 8 house builders, 60% of the housing, that is not a dynamic, rich ecosystem, you know, and that is not what we've got in housing at the moment. We have a few massive oak trees in the forest that are killing or starving, should I say, innovation and different ways of doing things. And so that's really why this project's, I think, really important, is that it is very ambitious. It has set out massive kind of things it wants to try and achieve. And that's why, you know, we need your money. We need to get the community share offer to be a success because we need it to work, because we need to be able to hold it up in an exemplar as a lamplighter for a different way of delivering houses for people in rural communities.
No, really, really interesting. Really keen to build on that shortly. But before doing that, Paul, I just want to go back to something that Grant said and just sort of build on it, because you did touch on it before. But I think a lot of people will be listening today and be really inspired by the project that the three of you are kindly talking about. And just something I just wanted to build on is, what does a ethical investment look like? So you mentioned that there could be a community share, that you mentioned that it could be somebody from outside wanted to invest in good. What does that investment look like in terms of what would you need to invest? What would that mean to you? What would be risk? Like, I'm just quite keen, and I appreciate there isn't a one size fits all, but or maybe even if it's the direction to where somebody could maybe go and do some more research, because I think a lot of people listening will be quite inspired and quite interested.
Yeah, brilliant question, Ben. How long have you got?
Well, we've got about another 15 minutes.
Okay, well, I won't take up too much bandwidth in that case. So there's a whole spectrum, of course, isn't there? So there's if you take the idea of the spectrum on the left-hand side, you've got what's called environmental ESG investing, environmental and social governance, and that's, you know, the funds and the companies that trade on the stock market. And, you know, generally speaking, it's what they call best of breed investing. So even in the world of ESG, I'm reminded of one very famous brand that begins with a V and ends in a gin. The top holding in their climate fund was a Dutch and British dual listed oil company whose name I shall not mention. So you kind of have to sort of get your yardstick out and take a bit of a measure of what's really going on underneath on it. So that's sort of one end of the spectrum. And then, you know, towards the right hand side, it's what they call impact investing. So you get the companies in the stock market that have a purpose. So they might be solving some sort of environmental challenge or social challenge, energy efficiency, building materials, it could be health and safety, it could be data, so on and so forth. So there'll be a bunch of fund management companies in the stock market who, you know, build and design funds and sell it into that market. And then we sort of, you know, come into the world of community shares, community bonds, what Grant and Charlie and Hook Norton are doing. That's what we call direct impact investing. So really, you know, I'm sort of reminded of, you know, the fair trade framework, where you wanted to be able to make a difference with your money. This is what direct impact investing is really allowing people to do, is to make a direct impact with their money. So, you know, Hook Norton, what are you doing? You're building a community. You're allowing people to get affordable housing, affordable rents, to be able to not spend an absolute fortune, to minimize how much you spend on your energy consumption, and so on and so forth. So you're genuinely making people's lives better. You can sort of touch and feel that. So it's very, very tangible. And that's very exciting to a lot of people, because they don't actually get an opportunity to do that with their money. And then, of course, you know, the other two aspects to any investment are risk and return. You know, of course, anybody who's investing in this area needs to appreciate a little bit about liquidity. So, you know, if they go onto FX's website, they'll see some handy hints on how to think about risk and liquidity and so on and so forth. But yeah, you know, there is a, you know, an attractive rate of return that is competitive with interest rates, let's say. And then, you know, ultimately you're investing in something like housing. So, you know, housing, it's not going away. I have used the phrase as safe as houses before. I think Charlie sort of smirked the last time I used that, but you know, that's what you're doing. You're, yeah, at the end of the day, you're sort of investing in you know, you're having a direct impact on people's lives. Mm. You're investing in a housing scheme.
Amazing. No, really, really useful. Thank you for that. And certainly would encourage those listening to go and have a look at your website, because I'm sure there's some great content there. Grant, as with Paul and Charlie, you have also kindly chosen a song for our listeners. So are you going to outdo your friends?
Oh, absolutely. Mine's the best of all three of them. Thank you for saving that for last. So, you know, mine is Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, which is a freedom song. It says, you know, car represents freedom. It means getting away. It's escaping from the reality into a new place, you know, to a promising tomorrow. And I think so that's really key to what we all try to do. You know, none of us like the status quo, particularly in this particular sector, you know, housing. And we think that there is a brighter future. So that's my choice.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the final part of the Business Brunch this morning here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I definitely recommend heading over to the Get Radio website tomorrow, because there will be the video version and the podcast version. So you'll have a chance to listen back. So there's been some really, really great content here. Grant, I'm just keen to build on something you touched on earlier, which was that you're hearing from other locations, other groups who want to know more about what you do. And I appreciate it's quite difficult without knowing what their questions are to give advice. But I guess from your point of view, what would be the things that you would be considering if you were another community that was listening to this show now? What is the good, the bad, and the ugly of a project like this? What are the things to consider?
I mean, a lot of legal issues, you know, in terms of how you set yourself up, you know, whether you how you set yourself up in terms of legalities. It's creating a board, really. I think it's people from the community to step forward and say, look, I'm happy to be on the board. I'm happy to help. There's through it, finding different skill sets available on the board. So people who can look after money, who can start to chase investment or donations or look at grants. And, you know, looking at grants is a complicated business. You know, there's a lot of hoops you have to go through. You know, it's not just a question of just putting down the name of our project and just hoping that a grant walks through. I hate using the word grant because I came kind of thinking I'm supposed to be delivering all this money. Grant who works for Hook Norton Community Land Trust. But the grants that we've got and we've achieved, we've all got, there's a lot of paperwork. None of it's easy. And the commitment from the board members is probably the most crucial part of this, is people who are prepared to step forward and say, look, I have some time, I can spare an hour a week because 2 hours a week I have certain skills, and making sure that those people are used in the right way. Then it's just looking at projects. I mean, the world is your oyster, you know. It's just saying, what do we need where we live, you know? And there's a social thing, and very interesting at the Ethics 10th birthday party that we attended last week. You know, there were other organizations there, you know, gyms that had a social component where you know, they were helping you know, the communities in you know, they're not the same project that we are. You know, there's a very, very different project, but they have the same ethical slant, you know. And that's why we sit on the ethics platform, because those are other opportunities for people to invest. And, you know, and if you look at the ethics platform, you will see different types of projects that all represent that same sort of worldview. And I think that's so important. So it's just trying to work out what you need. You know, there are challenges ahead. I mean, the biggest challenge is the land, if you are going to build something. You know, because you don't want to pay over the odds for the land, because then that's going to restrict what you can do. You know, so if you've got a landowner who's chasing the biggest buck, you know, he will sell it to you know, whoever's going to give them the best money. You know, we talked about, you know, the Church of England. You know, they're one of the biggest landowners in the country. You know, they're selling off land, but they have to sell it because to the highest bidder, because their governance and their charity obligations mean that they have to earn enough money from it. Or in the most money they can from it. So that the whole land issue is a big problem. And I think some landowners are coming to they're looking at it now and saying, well, you know, we can do something here. You know, we can give back, we can be altruistic. We don't need to achieve the maximum. You know, we can actually look at it and say, well, this will help this project along. So I think they're by communicating it outwards and doing what you're doing and talking to us and other communities, having the same meetings and the same discussions and things like that, and the same priorities, will push this along. It will move along to the next stage, and that's really rewarding. So there's a lot of work involved. We're not going to say it's easy. I mean, Charlie's been involved for 6 years, and look at him; he's only 22. So I mean, the thing is, it does mean that we have. Have lucky to have people who are willing to step up and say, look, you know, count me in. Not just on the board, but in the community as well, who can say, I can do this, or I can do this.
Amazing. I think the main thing is to, or the first thing is to really understand the community desire and need. And actually, it's about talking to a community. There might be four people that think this is a great idea and hair off trying to make it happen. But unless the community are genuinely supportive of it, it's always going to be an uphill battle. And I think really opening that dialogue and listening to what people say is absolutely critical. And Grant talked about land, and absolutely it is difficult. And some people might take a more enlightened view. But there are some elements of the planning system which can play to your favor. There's a thing called exception sites. So if you're trying to, if you can demonstrate a local need for affordable housing and you are going to deliver purely affordable housing, you can access land that might not normally get planning permission. So land that might be outside of the village envelope or the town boundary that would be seen as open countryside, if it is for affordable and there is a demonstrated local need, there's a slightly different channel and route that you can go down. So, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, but I think it's that first piece, like genuinely understanding need and demand and genuinely getting a community to engage and support, because you will need that support to keep going for the amount of time something like this takes.
Amazing. Amazing. We are very, very almost out of time. We've probably got a minute, a real push, probably 45 seconds. But one of the things we do like to do on this show is just give a kind of a takeaway top tip or something to remember or something to consider. So I am going to put the three of you on the spot, if that's okay, with a takeaway tip. Like I said, it can be something we've covered already or can be something fresh. I'll start with you, if that's all right, Paul.
Takeaway top tip. Well, I would say always approach this kind of thing with a sense of humor, because it's really important to maintain your sanity. So yes, enjoy whatever it is, whatever you're doing, enjoy it.
What about yourself, Charlie?
My top tip is go and look up hooknorncommunitylandtrust.org, and from that get a link through to the FX funding page and look at the funding. So it's a community share offer. So you put money into the investment and you can get up to 6% return on your investment. So it's not a donation, it is an investment. And then as money comes free from the project after year three, you can apply to withdraw it. So if you have any spare money and you're thinking, I mean, not many people have spare money, but people have money they're trying to invest, undoubtedly. If you feel that you can, you know, you read through all of the terms and conditions and understand the implications, investing in a project like this is so much more than just giving a few people some housing in Hook Morton. It is about setting an alternative way and of communities solving their own problems.
Amazing. 10 seconds to go. Grant, what's your final tip to end the show?
Do what Charlie says. How's that?
There we go. Look at that. That is the end of the Business Brunch here on Get Radio with me, Ben Thompson, this morning. But thank you so much to our three experts for joining us to talk about all of the amazing things going on at Hook Norton Community Land Trust. And we've certainly spoken about a lot that could be really considered by any of us here in Oxfordshire. So thank you for that. If you are just tuning in, we've had Grant Appleton, Charlie Luxton and Paul Pizzala. So thank you for that. We will be back next week with three brand new guests. We're going to be joined by Christine McRitchie of Earthwise Girls Limited, Caroline Herman of All Your Period Box, and Nancy Hunt of the Nassau Trust. And we're talking about period poverty. So finally, just a reminder that you can listen to this show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is a podcast format or certainly the video format as well, which goes out on the Monday morning and the Tuesday on the Get Radio Facebook page or on your favourite podcast platforms. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I hope you're doing something wonderful and I'll see you all next week.